Just a quick word from our sponsor before we jump into today's episode. Optimizing your internal processes can often be a huge unlock for streamlining revenue and getting you and your team, if you have one, out of a manual process. If you're looking to reduce costs and headaches in one fell swoop, consider graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere, and you cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Everything seems to be more expensive these days, so proven ways to cut costs and boost performance at the same time, like NetSuite, are kind of a no-brainer. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/SPI. netsuite.com/SPI. Once again, netsuite.com/SPI. And now a quick word from our sponsor before we start the show. Ready to earn sustainable income while creating the work you're passionate about? Get started with Memberful. Whether you teach online courses, host a podcast, run a blog, or write a newsletter, Memberful has all the tools you need to unlock revenue and deeply connect with your audience through subscription membership. Their platform allows you to easily gate content, communicate with your audience, and tier membership access directly on your own website. Plus, with Memberful, there's no need to change your workflow. They work seamlessly and integrate with the tools you already use, including MailChimp, Discord, Zapier, ConvertKit, Google Analytics, and more. Utilize their powerful built-in features and dashboards and watch your business grow. The best part? Memberful gives you full control and ownership of your audience, your brand, and your business. Get started for free at memberful.com/SPI. One more time, that's memberful.com/SPI.
We could put out less videos, but pour all that effort that we put into creating maybe two or three videos to put into one, but that one performs so much better than those two or three that maybe didn't were performed okay or typical or just kind of, they're not going to go anywhere. They're great for a day or two or maybe for the week or when there's a hype around something, but then it goes away. But what if we put all the effort we're going to put into the best title and the best thumbnail possible and then have the best video that answers that thumbnail, right?
Welcome to the Smart Passive Income Podcast, where it's all about working hard now so you can sit back and reap the benefits later. And now your host, he's lean, he's green, he's a podcasting machine, Pat Flynn.
Hey, and real quick, our sponsor today is Uplift Desk, creators of office furniture designed to help you work better and live healthier. If you haven't tried a sit/stand desk before, this offer from Uplift is the perfect opportunity. Plus, you can support the show at the same time. Visit upliftdesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. A desk should fit the user, right? Which is exactly why Uplift Desk has a ton of customization options. They're stable, the materials are solid. I mean, just the choices of material alone are incredible, all the way from laminate to eco to bamboo and even solid wood. The option to stand while working is just healthier, better circulation, better movement, which helps to reduce all kinds of different health risks and repetitive strains. And over a million customers have chosen Uplift Desk for their innovative designs, direct to consumer pricing, same day shipping. They can even give you free accessories with every desk. Uplift is a great deal, and they're built to last and include an industry-leading 15-year warranty, free shipping, free return shipping if you need to do that as well. So go to upliftdesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. That's upliftdesk.com/SPI to get 5% off your entire order. So for the last year and a half, I've been talking about a new venture of mine, a little side project, a little side hustle in the Pokemon hobby collection space. You may have heard me talk about this on a Friday episode, perhaps on social media, on Instagram, on Twitter every once in a while. But today we are going deep because my special guest today is my producer slash editor for that channel. His name is Dan Patrick Norton. He's actually somebody who's been a part of the SPI community for a very, very long time. He has a pretty incredible story to how he got here and now working with me on Deep Pocket Monster. And we'll give you a quick update during the episode about how that channel has been going. It's just a little preview. It's been going really, really well. And today we're going to talk about our approach for how we got into this space and how we decided to take a different approach compared to some of the other influencers and authority figures in this space. And it's been working really, really well. I mean, so well, in fact, to give you a quick preview, that Pokemon, the company, the largest media franchise in the world, is now building a relationship with me and is sending me product ahead of when those things are launched so that I can film them and share them with my audience. It's just been an incredible ride, and I'm so grateful that we get to chat today about the approach we take. And if you have any interest in YouTube and how YouTube works, this is definitely something that you'll want to pay attention to. But even if you're not into YouTube, you're going to find that our approach is going to be very different than perhaps the way that you've been approaching things, and maybe give you some ideas for how you might be able to make an impact in a space that perhaps seems crowded or perhaps hard to reach the audience for, because it can be a challenge for sure. But we've definitely taken a strategic approach, and we're here to tell you about it. So this is episode 581 of the Smart Passive Income Podcast, and this is Dan Patrick Norton, the producer and one of the editors for Deep Pocket Monster. We're gonna have some fun. Here we go. Dan, welcome to the Smart Passive Income Podcast. Thanks for being here, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, Pat. Really, really excited about this one.
We have a long history together, and now we're working so closely, in fact, that we text each other every single day. And you are now the producer at Deep Pocket Monster, which is this exploding YouTube channel that we started in the Pokemon space together. It's very much your project as much as it is mine. We're going to get into that. We're going to get into how we approach a video together, how we work together, and how a video comes to be, or how we scrap ideas and all that stuff. But I also know that you, for a long time, actually were a listener of the Smart Passive Income Podcast, right? Like, how long ago was that, and what were you doing around that time?
Oh, man. It had to have been 2012 or 13. 2012, I graduated my second film school, and I was just like, I don't want to be in film or TV. And my desire was I wanted to be creating like a web series, online content. I felt like that was the direction it was going. My professors were like, there's no money online. Don't waste your time. You got to go where New York, your TV ads, like this is where you want to be, or go out to LA. I just like, I don't believe it, but I'm not going back to school. I just finished two schools. I'm not going back for business because I knew I needed to figure out my own way to do it. So I was like, well, I already listened to a bunch of wrestling podcasts. There's got to be some business podcasts out there. So I could remember opening up the app and just typing in business. And there was Smart Passive Income, along with a couple others that we're all connected with. And I was like, let me just start listening to these and binge listening over all of that time on these long walks in the summer, commuting back and forth to New York City. I was working for Major League Baseball and sports live streaming at the time, trying to figure out how do I build my own business so that I could create video content that's fun and stuff that I actually enjoy, not TV, not movies. That's someone else's dream. And that's kind of how it started. And it's funny how it's full circle right now.
Yeah, because I mean, we're kind of living that dream now together with this new channel. But that was, okay, 2013, and you're working for MLB and, you know, working for somebody else. When did you start working for yourself? And what was it that you were doing first?
So I was trying to figure out things for a long time. And I could not get things started. I was very guilty of just like listening and not actively doing anything because I just could. But it was hard because I couldn't figure it out. I also was single with no kids. I mean, I was dating my wife at the time, but it was just like, you know, you don't have that motivation of I need to make something happen right now. Got married in 2015, started feeling that once our son was born in 2017, I was like, something needs to happen. I can remember sitting in, you know, the operating room after she had a C-section and holding him for the first time and just thinking like, I'm responsible for you. Like, and I need to,
I remember
like
that feeling,
you know, and I got to make something happen right now. And, you know, going through that first month or two, I'm like, you know, I think parents could really use some help here because I could use a channel, and all these channels are like boring doctors or nurses or just a couple. And I'm like, I think these videos could be better. So I started like a parenting thing using affiliate marketing, using your, you know, your course and your content there to figure that out, along with some other content creators that I've learned from, like Roberto Blake and Sean Cannell and all that, of building a YouTube channel. So I started this parenting channel, although I didn't really have a desire to build in there. I'm like, it's a way of making some money, right? So that was kind of where I got my feet wet with building some, you know, affiliate marketing funds there and some ad revenue as the channel started to grow over that year. And ultimately ended up going into like essentially freelance, with kicking and screaming into freelance. I did not want to, and I never really considered it freelance. Owen Video, my mentor through many of these years, he really helped me like craft it as, don't look at it as freelance, but as a business owner who can then hire people to do that. And that's what I started to do alongside that to try to make my way out of the world of sports live streaming and MLB and Disney.
Mm. I didn't realize that Owen was like a mentor of yours. Owen is such good people. He had he and I connected at Vid Summit a number of years ago, and just such good energy, real good people. And then he had a terrible run with cancer and going through some really hard times, leaving video for a while. And he's just always bringing positivity to the world, no matter what's happening to him. I didn't know that you were working kind of with him.
Yeah, if it wasn't for Owen, I wouldn't be working with you on this channel, because he was the one that said, Dan, if you don't start doing services, you're never going to get out of there. You know, he knew. I told him, I was like, man, I got this parenting thing going, but the kid's getting older. I don't really care about sharing baby stuff anymore. And he's like, you could do that and build it. But he's like, but if you really need money right now, start figuring out services you can offer. And that's where I said, like, kicking and screaming. I was like, Owen, I'm not doing this. And he was like, you need to start right now if you want this to happen sooner than later. Otherwise, you could wait for as long as you need to wait and stay at your job and do that. And man, I tell you, that guy, if it was not for his push, him and I are very different personality wise. He's very like the extrovert, outgoing kind of type. And I needed that push, that hard push to do it. And man, I owe so much to him. And man, he's fighting it. He's got this focus now on beating cancer. He's got a whole channel on that. And man, that guy has pushed me so hard in such a personal coaching way over the years. Mm. To get me to do it. And I'm so thankful for it, because if I didn't, and kind of look at it in a business perspective, that I wouldn't have turned to helping others, you know, edit video and all that kind of stuff. And then that's where I learned I'm not here to build an agency. My best work is when I work with a limited few people and can work in a producer mindset, which is what I knew back in college, what I knew back when I was creating my own videos, like way before YouTube existed, and just creating on like a little DV tapes with my friends. Like, my dream has always just been to be able to be, my best work is where I'm able to just kind of be a producer and then build things together for a limited project or a very focused project versus over many and a bunch of different clients. So thankfully I learned that lesson and had him kind of push me there.
Big shout out to Owen at Owen Video on most of the places. If you want to find him, we'll put links in the show notes to him, and I need to reach out to him again. So thank you for that. Kicking and screaming into freelancing, what were some of the things that you were taking on to, you know, stay afloat? And like, did you enjoy those projects?
So my background in sports live streaming was working on live stream baseball games, right? And it was also for like ESPN and WWE, a bunch of these others. My very first job in that business was taking clips from these live streams in real time, and they become clips that viewers or fans get to watch like within minutes of it happening. So a home run happens in a baseball game. We clip that out. We don't do any editing to it. We just clip it out, take a thumbnail, and get it out. So we were doing that in 2009, you know? So this is a long, it wasn't called repurposing then. But when I sat down with Owen, he was like, you need to find an area that you could be the master of. And that's where I kind of went down into repurposing. You know, it's not that I loved it. It was just something that, hey, I've been doing this professionally for years. And,
and that was a hot word too. Everybody wanted repurposing stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's where I was like, let me lock down into repurposing and specifically live stream repurposing, because a lot of people are doing live streams, but then not repurposing it because, so they do okay on replay, but you want to be able to pull clips out and pull things out. But then you want to edit those clips to make it have context so that it's fresh, right? You could just pull something out and it's to the same audience, like, okay. But if something feels and seems fresh, then it's usable and it could grow another account. And that's kind of where I locked it. I did not love it. I really did not love it, which is part of why I think I was like kicking and screaming, but it made the difference. And I'm thankful that I did, because when the pandemic happened, sports shut down and I had no work. My job had nothing for me. And I knew the night NBA, I can remember the night NBA shut down. It was a Wednesday night and I was at the youth group at my church, and I go, oh man, I'm going to go to work tomorrow and there's going to be nothing. I don't know what it's going to look like. Went to work the next day. Everything was canceled and they said, well, go home and we'll figure it out. And that day I went home and I said, this is it, Dan, this is your chance. You've wanted this because you've been so busy with this job that you haven't been able to like build your business. Now you're kind of handed the opportunity to do it. So I doubled down on the repurposing and took in clients, and we ended up working together because you were going live every day and needed to repurpose some clips.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, first of all, another example of somebody needing a push, right? Needing a reason, mm-hmm. needing like actual circumstances to be put in a certain way so that action can finally be taken. And I know that, you know, my story, many people do, getting laid off was that for me. For you, it was the pandemic and not having any more work. I mean, some of us need that and a push, or else we need to rethink about what is really important so that we can have that push. And then, yes, the pandemic happened. During the pandemic, I live streamed every single day. And I knew that you were doing repurposing stuff. And you had, you and I had met each other in person a couple times, once in New York when I was on a SwitchPod tour with Caleb, another time in Philadelphia during Podcast Movement. And I had known who you were. And, you know, I know you do great work. So I reached out to you. We decided that you were going to do some repurposing, like you said, taking clips from the income stream, which was my daily show during the pandemic, and then putting it onto a separate channel. And it worked. It did pretty okay. And that channel had, you know, several hundred views within a week, and then several thousand and hundreds of subscribers. But then I realized that that was not going to be a good use of resources or time for me. So then mm-hmm. we kind of just stopped that for a while. But I always remembered that you were available if I wanted to do repurposing in that way again. And then during the pandemic still, my kids get a little bit into Pokemon and I start getting into it too. I start researching it deeply like I always do with anything new that I'm into because I want to get highly involved. And then what happens is I discover so many amazing channels on YouTube from Pokemon. And actually I'm reminded because Pokemon became an interest of mine and my kids as a result of a trip to England and visiting one of my best friends, Chris Ducker. He and his son Charlie were really into Pokemon, and they introduced me initially to people like Leon Hart and Unlisted Leaf. And these are creators in the Pokemon space who I was like, these guys are insane. They just open packs all day and they get this many views. Like, that's ridiculous, but let's watch it. Okay. And then Pokemon was just kind of it's always on the side. But in 2020, that's when I started to go full force with it and actually turn it into a hobby that I wanted to get into. And then I actually, I don't know if it was fate or whatever, but I don't listen to Gary Vee all the time. But for whatever reason, I did one day. And on his show, somebody called in. His name was Nick. And he had a Pokemon YouTube channel called PokéRev. And this was after the collectibles market in 2021 started to explode. And I think this is why Gary had PokéRev on, because he was a collectibles person in the Pokemon space. And I was like, dude, this guy Nick's like, I like his energy. And he's opening packs with Gary Vee. I'm going to go check his channel out. And then I just fell in love with his content, so much so that I reached out to him and I was like, yo, I love your stuff. Like, can I help you in some way? Can I like help you with your live streams and help you mod? And he's like, Pat Flynn, what are you doing here? And I was like, what do you know who I am? And he's like, yeah, I used to listen to your podcast like way back in the day, and I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today without you. And we just connected and I was like, this is insane. Like, this is such a small world. Anyway, I become a mod for his channel. I fall more in love with this hobby. I see, as an entrepreneur, there are so many different ways that I could potentially bring something new to this space because I'm an entrepreneur. I see holes. I see opportunities. And I'm like, you know what? I think I'm going to create a YouTube channel on Pokemon. And then I immediately reach out to you because I know I'm not going to be able to edit these videos myself. And I'm like, Dan, I think I want to create a Pokemon YouTube channel. What do you think? Like, what did you think when I reached out to you and pitched this to you?
Well, you first told me, you were like, you have an idea for a channel, but it's completely different than this.
Yeah.
And you were like, do you want to talk about it? And I was like, yes. And then you're like, cool. Well, it's about Pokemon. And I'm in the 90s. I was all in. I was a Pokemon kid. Like, you know, I loved Pokemon in the 90s. I was huge with the video games, had the cards and all that. Obviously fell out of it. And now regret not buying a lot of those cards when I had the chance. But now that I work on this, but yeah, man, it was crazy. Cause I was like, this sounds like it could be something really fun. It's different. It's not business video, right? Everything I've been doing at that point was business or, you know, self-publishing, these kind of different things that, you know, although I enjoy working with these clients, it's like, it's not necessarily fun, content. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to have a chance to work on something that was fun and connects to my childhood, I was like, yeah, this sounds like a no-brainer.
So I remember sending you an idea on like a first video or something. And, you know, you had given me a quote on like how much it would cost to get editing services and whatnot. And, you know, what it would be like for, you know, X number of videos per week or what have you, whatever, you know, the standard kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then I think I pitch you like the first video and I film a whole bunch of things on my end and I share it with you. And then I think you replied with like, oh, like this isn't just like taking footage and like cutting a few things and then putting it together. Like this is a production. Like this is much bigger than I thought it was. What was going, like, what was your mindset with relation to like when you really saw the vision that I had for this channel, like what it meant and what it was going to take?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It, you know, I guess when we're so used to just working with, you know, talking head shots and here's right. this, and maybe we'll just show, you know, show a shot of this, or yeah, you know, I hadn't really been watching Pokemon content at that point. So then maybe looking at some channels where it's just like, okay, it's just cards on a desk. So it looks like two different shots we can go back and forth with. This seems pretty easy. But then it was like, okay, so this is going to become, you know, storytelling. You know, this is going to be, you know, a lot deeper. To me, that was exciting because it was like something exciting to, you know, to work on that's more than just the business stuff. But I think we just had to rearrange maybe how much of the content we needed to get in and have some team put together, just because based on my availability as well with the clients I already had currently had.
Yeah, so it was going to be a lot more produced, a lot more B-roll, a lot more story, a lot more cuts, a lot more of this. And so, you know, we figured out a deal structure that worked for us initially to work for a couple months just to see what would happen.
Yeah.
And we launched the channel. Essentially, we had a video come out in December of 2020, just kind of as a preview, like here's what's coming.
The trailer.
Kaplan's getting into the Pokemon space. Yeah, trailer. And I remember we premiered that and we had a lot of support from PokéRev, and being a moderator in a channel for so long already at this point, maybe, and by so long, I mean like 4 or 5 months, but I was in there every single day, almost like just participating and getting to know the community, asking questions. I was also doing some reconnaissance. I was like, what do you like about these videos? What kinds of videos do you wish existed? And, you know, me being a business-minded person, I saw a lot of opportunity there. So this is why the production is the way it is, because that's a unique advantage that you and I have together to bring these stories in a way that's different than what these other creators can do. And also taking the approach that, hey, I'm not an expert in this. I'm brand new in this and I'm learning as I go, and I'm going to share what I learn with you, and we're going to find some fun things to tell stories about. And the reaction was very positive initially. Like that fed me so much energy, because I was like, wow, I am starting something new in a space that I knew nothing about, and already people are saying great things about it. And that motivated me. And so we just got cranking on video ideas and coming up with stuff. And, you know, a lot of people now see that 14, 15 months later, we have 150,000 subscribers. We have, you know, hundreds of thousands on videos, even videos that were published within a week ago. There are over 100,000 views, and they're like, wow, you're so lucky. You hit gold, you struck oil, you know, et cetera. But then it's like, well, you have how many years of video experience behind you? I have how many years of YouTube experience? And then that combined with just all the mistakes that we've both made over the past, it's like our powers combine into this one channel now, and it's just going so well.
Yeah. Well, I think going into it, right? And this is something that, you know, mutual friend Daryl Eves would say, and I had gone through his training prior to this, which was perfect timing to have gone through training directly with him, would be the idea of when you go into a space or you're creating that channel, is that you understand already what the viewers are clicking on. Like, go in knowing what's already working in the space. And you were already doing it because you were the perfect, you know, person. You got into it and got interested and started watching all these channels. So you already were that viewer. So taking that interest of the things that you like as a viewer already sets you up in a perfect way. If you go into a new space and you don't know what's working on YouTube, you're going to be shooting yourself in the foot potentially by starting that and expecting something and nothing happens because you don't know what the viewers are interested in. So going in, the big benefit, one, yeah, you got that connection with Rev, but because you were going in as a viewer, starting in that new space, you already kind of have this sense of the things that are already working in there that we could start right away with.
Right. And then we started experimenting with a lot of different types of videos. And now, you know, 14 months later, we have a really good groove. We have certain kinds of videos that we know hit really well. And within those sort of buckets, as we call them, or as Daryl calls them, and big shout out to Daryl Eves. He's been on the podcast before. YouTube Formula is his book. It's just really great. And his training I went through as well. We have these buckets that we now know we're going to hit, and we pay attention very specifically to the data and the analytics. Had we always, was that like very, it wasn't definitely from me, it was probably from you, but like how early on were we looking at data to help inform the decisions we make?
For me, day one, because I had gone through that training, because Daryl drills it into you that this is what you got to do. And thankfully, you know, we could, right? I mean, when you very start, you have no data, right? But we could at least look at that first video and see that, and we could look across the spectrum of other channels and what's out there and working. But even in just little ways of, are we getting the kind of traffic we want? Are we getting the, are we getting the response? Are people watching these videos? How, and the retention for me was the big part, right? Which is how long people watch, the average view percentage, their view duration. And that was the thing that I was monitoring the most, especially in the beginning. And I still do. I monitor it like ridiculous now. But like then it was just like, all right, where are people dropping or skipping in this video? How can we tighten the next one up, or the next type that's like this up? Mm-hmm. And we've been progressing. And I think that's where we've kind of, I don't want to say mastered it, but we've become master. We've been mastering it from the beginning through to now, and continuing to find areas. But that's data that you get always. As long as you've got a number of views, you could get some kind of a retention chart to see where mm-hmm. people are skipping. And that, to me, was something that I was monitoring right away so that we could start tightening up our videos. Because our first few videos were very long. And there's nothing wrong with long. It's just, where are the parts that they're dropping that we could tighten it up so that they don't have to skip those? So it's right. better to have a little bit shorter of a video so they don't have to skip anything than them skipping and getting to the end. And now you've lost all this potential watch time.
I've taken so much from what you have taught me and what Daryl has taught us from the Pokemon channel into now the Pat Flynn channel. And I'm watching my analytics there, and things are growing quite well, and the revenue is going up. And we'll talk about revenue in a little bit. But going back to some of the beginning months of the Deep Pocket Monster channel, in addition to like the data, what were some other important things that we were making sure to pay attention to closely so that we knew we were heading in the right direction?
Well, one, the views, obviously, right? So we want to see that we're, you know, views are going up, and you know what videos didn't hit.
Many didn't hit.
Yeah.
Some did, some didn't, or a lot didn't.
And then questioning why, right? Because it could be a number of different reasons. And we kind of have to, that's where the data becomes useful. And I think for some people that can become very overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I think the benefit we have is there's two of us, so that we could kind of bounce things off each other. I think for you, it might be too busy for you to have to dive super deep all the time. And then, you know, for me, it's like looking at these things and then saying, hey, here's these two things. What do you think this might mean? You know, we have, right. you know, low click-through rate, or people aren't clicking on this video, but when they do click on it and they watch, they're watching the whole video. So, you know, what is this likely meaning? At that point, we'd probably assume it's probably the thumbnail.
Right.
Because people aren't clicking on it, but when they do click on it, they do watch the whole thing.
And we have seen literal hockey stick-like improvements mm-hmm. when we have figured that out, made a change, and boom. There was one video that, there's been many videos that we publish and then they're just initially not going very well. But there was one in particular where we did a test on cards and how easily they scratch. A lot of our videos that people seem to enjoy are the more sciencey kind of videos. And we've played into that. Like we've used bits of Back to the Future Part 3 for science and like things like that. That just like always end up in the videos and it becomes a part of our language and culture of our videos. It's just been so cool. And there's a whole community now. Like I want to talk about that too. But there was one video where we were doing a scratch test and I put a lot of time and effort into creating this video and it was very informative, but nobody was watching it. I mean, when people watched it, like you said, people were watching a lot of that video like really, really well, and it was informative and we were getting really good comments. So we knew that there needed to be a change in the title and thumbnail. And how many thumbnails had we gone through? How long did it take? And then like what happened after that?
If we include the thumbnails that I was first testing and trying before we even launched the video, right? Testing as in we're going back and forth. I'll make a thumbnail and like text it to you and be like, what do you think? And then you go, ah, what about this? And we go back and forth. At least 20, if we were to combine those with probably about, maybe it's like about 10 and 10. So 10 before we released the video, finally picked one. And then probably mm-hmm. another 10, because we tried three or four other thumbnails that we put on that made no change or even dropped it in views. And I'll, So like you could do A/B testing, all that kind of stuff. But when a video is doing like that, it's like, I just want to be able to change it and see, does it make an immediate difference? And I'll watch the real-time views. So I'll change a thumbnail and I'll sit there and watch those real-time views. I'll be doing some other things, but I'll have it open and I'm going to be sitting there watching it and seeing, okay, do I see an immediate difference? And then if I do see one, okay, let's keep monitoring if this continues. If that does, okay, we made a good choice. Does it go down? Okay, maybe I need to put it back to that other one and kind of go back to the drawing board. And for that particular video, had to have been about two or three others before we found the one that made the difference. And once I put that up, you could almost immediately start to see the views. Not like it goes up crazy and dramatic, right? YouTube's not promoting a video that well, that much, if people aren't clicking on it. It's just not going to share it. But when it does happen to get shared, whether it's on someone's homepage or on a suggested section underneath someone already watching a video, and it notices that people start to click, it'll start to share more. We'll start to get more impressions. And then we start to see that. And that's what happened with that video. And now it's gone from what was going to be a dead video at 29,000 to 39,000.
Yeah, I have the data here. So 10 days after the video came out, 36,000 people watched. And that's pretty typical for us. It's between 18,000 and 60,000. So that's a lot, but like relatively speaking. And then 20 days after that, a whole month later, it's not even 10,000 more views after that. And then I'm literally at the graph when we change it. And then it's like from 30 days, it's 44,000. 10 days after that, it's 100,000. 10 days after that, it's 200,000. And we're now 54 days and it's about 200, a quarter million views on that video. And it's smoking still. It's like doing so good. And it's literally because we looked at the data. We said, this is not working. Let's figure out a way to get people to click on this thing. And it like you did so good on that. It's just been so amazing because you hear about stories like that. Oh, they changed the thumbnail and then it like worked. Oh, it like worked so well in this case. And we've had a few videos do that.
Yeah, I'll tell you this, though, I'm still not satisfied with it. Now, some people might say, oh, Dan, you're crazy. Like, if it's working that well, why would you do any other changes to it, right? It's gotten a lot of views at this point. But there's a lot of different traffic sources, right? And what I've learned from Daryl is that each traffic source is its own algorithm, right? It's not like there's a YouTube algorithm. There's algorithms for every single traffic source, and they operate individually, separate from each other.
Like search this, is one.
Yeah, search, suggested. Browse, those are all the different ways that YouTube will recommend videos within its own system outside of external, where you share it on your socials and websites and embedding. But this particular video does so well in browse, which would mean like home feed. It means you open up your YouTube app and it's right there in your home feed. So for a lot of people, if they maybe watched one Deep Pocket Monster video, it's very likely that later they come back to their app. And that video will end up being the first one because YouTube knows if people see it in their home feed, they're going to go click on it. Now, that tends to be a little bit of a bigger thumbnail, tends to take up a little bit more of your screen. This particular video is not performing to the way I'd like it in suggested. So that's like if you're watching a video and then there's those other videos below it. So someone's watching one video and they want to go to another video, or let's say they're watching one of the Deep Pocket Monster videos and we want that to be like up next or something. This particular video doesn't perform super well there. So now I'm in the phase of, I'm not going to just go and change the thumbnail. I'm going to use a software like TubeBuddy to do A/B testing on very small little things. So like a little change, a color change, a sizing change of a particular element of the thumbnail, maybe a word change, maybe trying your face and not your face. Currently that thumbnail that does not have your face in it. And that could also be why it's not performing in suggested, because maybe people are watching Deep Pocket Monster videos, but then don't see your face and they don't recognize that it's Deep Pocket Monster. Those are the things you could think through, and you get software like TubeBuddy to do a full 14-day A/B test where one day it'll be the original thumb and then the next day it'll be the variant. And then you get all this data to tell you how the two went, and we run it full 14 days and see how it is. I just finished a bunch of tests and the variants did not perform. So that told me the originals are working better. But that doesn't mean I'm going to stop. I'm going to keep going back and testing those, because those will help us inform us in the coming videos. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of backlog stuff, a lot of all those things, but it helps inform, okay, I see how this performs with your face and this type of video. So that'll inform the next video we make. We should do the thumbnail like this.
Mm-hmm. So good, dude. I know it sounds like a lot for people listening or watching this, and it's just like, this is what we have to do for this particular niche in this case, because we are not the experts who have the best knowledge in the world who could literally just put on a video like a guy named SM Pratt in the space who has just the most extensive knowledge of this industry, where anytime he turns on a camera, it's just like, you know, it's going to be golden. He doesn't need the editing. He doesn't need to worry about the data and stuff, because that will kind of, his expertise is enough for him to do that. Now, that being said, if he had expertise like he does and were to combine a lot of these strategies, I mean, he could 5X, 10X his channel, but he's old school and he's not probably not going to do that. Let's go through an example of how we actually create a video from scratch for Deep Pocket Monster. Now, traditionally, in the Pat Flynn YouTube side of things and just videos in general, my way of doing it was this. I go out into the audience and I try to understand what would be most helpful. I think it's important to start with some research and understand, what do people need help with? What are the things that are maybe inconvenient or the things that they want to learn about? Okay, cool. That's going to guide a video topic that I can create a video about. And in the Pat Flynn side of stuff, it's like, okay, well, how to start a podcast or how to do this, or, you know, a lot of how to in the educational side of things, right? But either way, I'm filming the video first and then I'm trying to figure out a title and thumbnail. But what's our approach at Deep Pocket Monster?
So it's the exact reverse, the opposite order, in that we will go back and forth throwing title ideas. Basically, what would sound like, you know, an interesting title, or looking out on the space and maybe even outside of the Pokemon space, but within a space within the target audience is also watching, right? Because there might be other ideas out there, kind of seeing what's actually working right now. What are people watching? How is this, you know, what are those things out there? And then how could we create a video that's not copying any of those? But we could say, how could we take something like this? And we start throwing some ideas back, or just creating some thumbnails. I'll do it right in Canva, super easy software. I used to draw some terrible thumbnails, some like terrible drawings.
They were pretty bad.
They were pretty bad. They were worse than pretty bad. But it was just kind of like, I need something visual. That was like a film school thing. Like we'd do all our storyboarding and just like literally
just stick figure
with a little, looks like a little penguin, just to show where their face is pointing, right? So it was bad. So I just started going into Canva, and I've got enough pictures of you now because of all the thumbnails we made to just kind of craft something. It doesn't look great, but it's just like, what if we created something in this? Does this look clickable? And then we could build a title from there, or we think of a title and then build a thumbnail from there. And as long as we know that it's something that is clickable, something that is interesting, then we could build the video. Because if you build the video first, and we've done this, and the videos haven't performed, right? Where we've made videos over the years, even over this year, where we've just like, oh, this sounds like a really great idea, but we didn't think about the thumbnail as hard as we should have, or spent as much time before. And then the video ultimately didn't perform as good as the video is, and as much time and effort we put into it, and the people who've watched, you know, like it. But if we didn't have an effective thumbnail and title first, so we've really learned that lesson this year, and it's paid off so much to sit down and say, you know what, we could put out less videos, but pour all that effort that we put into creating maybe two or three videos to put into one, but that one performs so much better than those two or three that maybe were performed okay or typical, or just kind of, they're not going to go anywhere. They're great for a day or two, or maybe for the week, or when there's a hype around something, but then it goes away. But what if we could put all the effort we're going to put into the best title and the best thumbnail possible, and then have the best video that answers that thumbnail, right? That's how you stay away from clickbait.
They have to match.
They have to.
That's where I was running into a lot of issues. If they don't match, you could still have a great title and thumbnail, right? Like maybe you nail it even after you film the video, but then like, because you've already filmed the video, the hook doesn't match the expectation that a person has when they click over, and therefore they're less interested, or they're less likely to go through, or the story doesn't carry on. So by taking the thumbnail title approach first, we can ensure that the video we create, and the moment the video starts, it already is getting into exactly what a person is expecting, or at least has some sort of hook that just gets people into it right away.
Yeah. You know, and another thing, well, that scratch video, we did this, right? We made the title, we made the thumbnail. We had been thinking about that thumbnail for weeks The problem we didn't think about with the original thumbnail, which the original thumbnail, this is a scratch test to see if you could scratch a card, right? A Pokemon card. We thought in the thumbnail, it'd be great to show like the most famous Pokemon card, which is a holographic Charizard, right? It's the expensive Charizard that everyone loves. And it's got this holographic, which is the shiny, you know, foil on the card. And we thought, well, that stands out because a Charizard always stands out. Everyone can recognize that if you're a Pokemon fan, you instantly recognize that visual. It's like, okay, that's going to stand out. Let's put a scratch on it and show it like being scratched. What we didn't account for was how that would turn people off and they wouldn't want to click because they, what we learned after from reading the comments, from seeing how people responded to it was, I don't want to see a Charizard get scratched that way. Mm-hmm. And we didn't scratch a Charizard in the video. We teased it. So we figured it was okay. Like, oh, we're going to do this and then swap it out for a non-Charizard card. But it turned people off. And so as much as we did spend the time on that title and thumbnail, it didn't perform because we didn't expect that variable. And
right.
That has helped inform now too, because a lot of times where we've thought, oh, why don't we just show this card? We shouldn't because it'll turn people off. And I think that made sense. And now we see a huge difference.
Right. And now the thumbnail, if you go and look at it, it's a different card, the one that we actually use on the test, but an exaggerated scratching effect on it. An arrow that says, don't do this. You don't know what caused that scratch before we even had like a box cutter on it, but it's like, why would you put a box cutter on it? In fact, on the thumbnail is a sleeve and everybody sleeves their cards in this space, but then you're kind of surprised that it would do something. Don't do this. You have to click on it now. And that's what's been working really well. Okay. So title, thumbnail, awesome. And then we go into, and it's true, we like speak in titles sometimes. We'll have a 10-minute back and forth conversation where it's just titles going back and forth. And it's like the weirdest conversation if you were to see it.
Out of context, it would make no sense.
Yeah, exactly. But it's we wait for the other person to react. And we go, oh, that's it, right? Or, ooh, I want to click on that. And we just keep going until we get there. We could probably take it one step further where, especially with videos in the future where we maybe invest, you know, a lot of money into buying something or creating something, maybe getting our Discord community involved with the thumbnails. Like, which one would you rather click on? Or what do you think this thumbnail or what do you think this title means? Or what do you expect out of it? That way we can even get more information. I know Mr. Beast does similar stuff to that. And we can work our way toward that. We have this awesome community now that's being formed on YouTube. And now we have in our Discord community run by Jay and another team member of yours. But we, after the title thumbnail, like usually I'm so stoked at that point. I'm like, yes, this video is going to be so sick. Like I want to create it. And then we get into the, like a super rough outline, right? Talk about that process and like how rough it actually is.
Yeah. So we'll kind of start out with just kind of, well, first the big thing is really starting with what's our hook. Right? Where are we landing people and where are we going? Right? We want to know where are we starting? You know, what does the audience know now? That's that storytelling. And what are they going to know at the end? Right? That's the key things we really need to figure out. And then kind of the middle is that journey. And I think more recently we've been getting better at this, like figuring out how do we take people along that journey so they don't forget what this is about. So in the end, the payoff, it's exciting for them.
Right. Or what's at stake. Right?
Right.
Like there has to be like, maybe it's a bad outcome. Maybe it's a good outcome. We don't know. So let's like stay around and figure it out. Like we did a video where, you know, I was curious to see because a lot of us in the Pokemon community, we ship cards like everywhere all the time. Like the people who buy, we buy cards from eBay, et cetera. We want like which shipping service is the best. Right. And I could have just done like a quick talking head video like, hey, I did an experiment and I found out that this company did best. Here are the cards. See, they look okay. But we told a story that had stake in it. And we also shared a reason why this was important. I actually got shipped a box and it was like totally damaged. And that was like, hey, like, do you want this to happen to you? Like, no. So which shipping company actually treats our cards the best? So I got three boxes, put the same cards loosely in each of those boxes, and then put an Apple AirTag actually in each of them. You had mentioned getting inspired by other channels and other spaces. That was a clear example of that. There was another channel that put AirTags in boxes to see like if they could ship cards to North Korea and like different other places. We weren't shipping cards to North Korea, but we were shipping cards to a mystery guest. This is another hook. We're going to ship it to a mystery guest. And they're going to open it We're going to track to see like which ones get there first and what route they take and whatnot from the AirTag. And then our mystery guest is going to open it and see what the damage is inside. And we're going to know which company handled our package the best. Like, whether you even like Pokemon or not, that is an interesting video that you'd want to know the outcome for, right? So we're hitting more than just collectors now. We're hitting a bigger audience as a result of that.
Yeah, we'll create the titles and thumbnails to stand out and be specific for that target audience, right? We're always creating that. But the fact that we could create it a little bit bigger or a little broader opens us up to a little bit of a bigger audience and more of a casual fan audience. So someone who maybe enjoyed Pokemon a little bit or just knows a little bit about it may become then a fan and turn into a Pokemon fan because now they started to watch maybe some of these videos that might be suitable for more of a broader audience than just for the like super niched collector audience.
Right.
Now we've got an opportunity and we've seen it with some comments that have come in where people have become fans of Pokemon cards because they've watched these videos, which is always cool to see.
And you can, like, we also track like people who've left a absorbent amount of comments in a short period of time. And you can see exactly the videos they watch one after another. They like spend all day watching all the videos. And it's just like, it's just so cool to see that that's going down, especially in the particular buckets, right? We only have two of our weird purchases on Etsy, but when we have like 10 of them, they're just going to keep feeding each other. Like, it's going to be amazing. Exactly what Daryl talks about. And we're actually executing on it. And that was something that was very hard for my other channel, which my Pat Flynn channel, it's like, hey, I have podcasting tutorials, but I also have a very popular video on PowerPoint. And I also have videos on business mindset. And I also have videos about videos. It's just like, it's hard for anybody, let alone YouTube, to understand, like, who do we feed your videos to? And that's why it's not just not getting as much traction as this. Anyway, let's go back to, so we got title, thumbnail, then we go into rough outline, basically, like you said, like, what's the hook? And where are people ending up? Like, what's the outcome, the promise? What's at stake here? And then the middle becomes like the storytelling part. And then it's kind of just, again, it starts very rough and it's bullet points like we should do this and then this happens and then this happens. And then we ultimately start filling in the holes and start filling in details and like, okay, here are the shots that we need now. And then oftentimes I do personally, I don't know if you do this as well, but I look at the script and I'm like, okay, let's do a round of jokes. Where can we add jokes and humor into this, right? Like, oh, here would be cool to add this little stinger or this little funny part. Like, zoom in close on my face while I look confused. Like, I'll write that in the script so that you or Zach or other editor kind of knows where to go with that. And then we usually get like, am I missing anything before like a super rough first cut?
Yeah, no, that's pretty much the order. And I think what makes us, like you and I, a good team in this sense that, you know, whether I'm editing or Zach is editing, you're really good at being able to see things before, right? So, we'll write it on outline. And then depending on the video, we'll go into a deeper script if it's highly storytelling. Other videos where it's like, sometimes we do these videos that become really successful that are mystery boxes where, you know, you'll open up the box that's, we don't know what's in it. And that's the curiosity about it. We really can't script that because we don't know what's in the box.
Right. True.
So we can't really script that out beforehand. But in other videos where we have like a whole lot of dynamic storytelling, we have to like really start to go in and script that out and figure out where we're going and the direction we're going. You're really good in that stage of inserting things that I would never think of, where I think for me, once we got a rough edit, the first draft, like not the video that's going to go out, it's just that first draft edit, looking at it and then going, okay, we could insert something here, or I could find something here, or find something that connects to pop culture, or a little meme that is within the community. And that's why I'm always trying to stay on top of the community, on top of the audience outside of our channel. What are the things that are popping or interesting for them that we could insert into here that people get excited for? And I know, like, right now, one of the big ones was that emotional damage, right? That was coming out. And you added it in a recent video, but even like a video prior, you say something that sounds like that. And we added something in there that just people comment about it, like, oh, emotional damage.
Yeah, it's the staying on top of trends and memes, bringing that into the videos, even though it's not related to Pokemon, but we make it related to the things that are happening, is interesting. There was one where we inserted like Bernie Sanders randomly sitting on a chair or something. And then, you know, speaking of community, you know, we've developed these really amazing fans of the show, you know, and I do what I can to give back to them. We do a lot of giveaways. we have a lot of, you know, we have live streams every week often, and we can get up to 1500 people watching concurrently. And that's where I think my 365 days of going live, going back to the income stream, has really helped, yeah, because I can manage a live stream now and make it entertaining and add visuals whilst speaking and interacting, whilst doing the card openings and telling a story and just kind of on the fly. It's like, it wasn't like that in the beginning, but I was, through practice, was able to get there. And we have now nearly 1,000 paying members of the channel now who pay through YouTube to join our club. Essentially, it's called the Gem Mint Club, and those people get access to a Discord, and it's just been really cool to see how they've been responding. And you know, I get lots of letters and fan letters now, kids, adults even, wanting autographs and whatnot. And every single thing that I talk about my book Superfans, we are implementing to a T here in Deep Pocket Monster, and it is working. I'm not just making this stuff up, people. Everything I wrote in that book works, and it's working again. I'm demonstrating it here in Deep Pocket Monster. And it's at a point now where I'm getting recognized on the street and people want me to take a photo with them or sign their Pokemon card or what have you. I've gotten invited to events already. Pokemon as a company reached out to me to get a relationship going. They're sending us product early, which is huge because now
And that's not because you're Pat Flynn.
No.
It's not because of the Smart Passive Income podcast.
No, it's not. You're right. It's because of what we've been able to do for the community here. And then, like you said, these little meme things. In one of those Pokemon Mystery Box videos, I opened it up and there was a random dish towel or dish rag in there. And so I, opening that up live, unscripted, just kind of play with that a little bit and make it funny and weird and like, why is this in here? And then you or Zach or one of the editors was like, I'm going to make this a character. So we're going to do like they do on the Pokemon show. Who's that Pokemon? And then it's like dish rag with eyes on it. And it's just like super silly. But people responded to that so much that that dish rag now has become an emote inside of our live streams that our members can use, that when I clean my table, that's right, they ask for it. They're like, we need a dish rag emote. And so now when I'm like cleaning the clutter or the dust off my desk, I use that dish rag, and then immediately I'll see like hundreds of those emotes pop up because the members know. But then non-members are like, what is this? Like, what is this language you guys have? Like, I want to be a part of this. I want to be included in the group. And then we get more members coming in. And now, like, this dish rag, as silly as it is now appearing in other videos. There was a video where we actually filmed the intro where I'm hanging clothes on a clothesline, and they're like Pokemon related clothes, but the dish rag is there too. And it's like, I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to point it out, but people who know, know. And it becomes this like insider language that the community has with each other. Or we'll even see in Discord, hey, did you guys see the dish rag in that last video? Like, it was here if you missed it. It's just like, it's just a dish rag, but it becomes a part of the language of the community. And we're leaning into that part of what we're doing as well.
Yeah, we're making videos that new viewers could come in, right? Like, we want to make videos that constantly new viewers can show up and watch and not feel like they need to watch a previous video to watch this, right? However, we want to reward the returning viewers because we want people to re-watch one video, watch another one, watch a third one, a fourth one, and keep coming back, whether it's back to back or just within the same month, right? We want them to come back, but we reward them with these like little things like that, like putting in the little dish rag or putting in something without necessarily making a big deal about it. People recognize and that they instantly feel excited to comment like, There's the dish rag. Is that the dish rag? Is that the thing that you opened up in one of your other videos? Like, even if they're not fully aware, they're just like, that stood out and that was weird. Wait, is that what I was thinking it is? And it's rewarding them and you're giving them, you know, I heard it said by someone who was teaching storytelling. It might've been a TED talk. I forget who it was, but they said, you know, instead of giving your audience 4, give them 2+2, right? They want to put stuff together. And it's very easy for us to just give everything. And like, you know, especially if with this audience, there might be a lot of utility how-to channels, just like you, Pat, like you've got the how-to channel. A lot of times we just want to do everything up front and just be able to give it to them blatantly. And yes, we should, right? Not enough people get into the content quick enough. Not enough people are sharing right away. They have all these things that the audience needs to skip through. However, when it comes to storytelling, the audience wants to put things together. They want to, right? Like when we're watching a movie, we don't just want to be handed everything. We'll be bored, right? We want to be able to start thinking, wait, is that what I think it means? And now you keep being curious to watch more and you want to see what you think become the thing that it is, right? You want to see it, that bit of that story come out. And that's these little elements in a small way, in a funny way, is, wait a second, is that that the, I got to go back and watch that mystery box again, because I know it's somewhere in here, and I got to know that was it. Right. Or they go in the comments and they go, that was it. Yeah, you're right. I can't believe you get all these replies, right? Those kind of things, that's a way of rewarding your returning viewers without alienating your new viewers. Cause a lot of people go, welcome back to the channel. And you guys remember when I did this, but how does a new viewer feel at that point? However, if every video, and the same with podcasts, right? Like, you know, any new viewer could come into this, every new listener could come into this podcast and listen to it and not having needed to listen to all the others to get to this point. However, there might be things that you say that your returning listeners will listen to and go, oh yeah, that's that thing that you do every time, you know?
There's just so much to unpack here. And I hope that this provides a nice little foundation for not just like how we made Deep Pocket Monster and where we're going with it. And, you know, we have big plans for it. We're doing some fun things and we're going to continue to learn, because we were definitely just scratching the surface for A, what's possible, but also B, what we could do better. I mean, there's so much more that we could do better. And what we want to do is inspire you, the listener. We are already inspiring other Pokemon YouTubers who've reached out to us for help, which is amazing because that helps the community. Yeah. This we come from a place of abundance. We're not going to hold anything back. We will tell you, and we want you to do well too, because there's just going to help everybody. And that kind of serve first approach, again, that's a term that I use here all the time that a lot of people know, has continued to work again and again. And here's another brand new space where it's working again. So, Dan, I couldn't do this without you, because it's definitely a team effort. And I feel like I definitely got lucky with the fact that you already grew up with Pokemon and this is a Pokemon space. So that was definitely helpful. But that's not to say you can't train somebody or you can't find somebody out there who can do a lot of this stuff with you, because they can fall in love with the channel as you're building it together, not just already in love with the topic. So any final words of advice for those building a content in a community channel out there?
Sure. Well, you know what? I know listening to all this could be super overwhelming, because we went from like data to like creating all these videos and now inserting things that your returning viewers are going to,
really,
you know, oh, now I got to insert pop culture references. Like, no, you need to make the videos that your target audience wants to watch. And our target audience for this tends to be a little younger, you know, from 18 to 30 and 40 range, but a little younger. So inserting current pop culture memes and all that kind of stuff, faster editing, all these different elements works. But your target audience might not be that age range. They might be a little older. They might be these different things. You need to know what works for them. And you might not need to add all that stuff. You might be able to make something that's a slower pace and that works. I've been watching this one video that's like blowing up millions. It's a guy who bought a lobster from a supermarket and he raised it. And now that video's got millions of views. It's a slow video. It's got terrible music. The guy just kind of talks, but I'm sucked in because the storytelling is good. But the editing, the look, all that stuff is nothing like we would do on Deep Pocket Monster. The thumbnail is literally just a store lobster, but it says store lobster as a pet. And you can't, could you not click on that?
Right.
But it doesn't mean that you have to look like what we do. So I don't want people to go out and go, oh, now I got to copy how the way they do their videos, that because that works and that must mean everybody. Just focus on your own audience. Start thinking about what are the things that are working out there and slowly build it up. This has taken us a year to really get to the stride that we're at right now, and we still only feel like we're getting started. You know, so there's ways to build up to it. Don't let the overwhelm hold you back from starting it. It's just get there and focus on your audience and what they like to watch.
14 months into this, or 15 months into this, we're generating 5 figures in revenue from this business already. And I knew nothing about this 2 years ago. There's no excuse. You can do this. You just got to get going and learn and stumble and fall and get back up and keep going and work with good people too. So Dan, thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate the inspiration. Looking forward to texting you probably later today to talk about the next video.
Yep, of course.
All right, man. Where can people go to learn more and like follow your stuff?
Well, I don't really have too much right now, but DanielPatrickNorton.com. It's being rebuilt, but DanielPatrickNorton on Instagram is probably the best place. And I pretty much go by Dan. I know it doesn't make any sense that it's full name like that, but it's the only way to find me and not a rugby player. So IG is a good place to hit me up.
Awesome. All the links in the show notes, and appreciate you, man. Talk soon.
Thank you, Pat.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Smart Passive Income Podcast talking about Deep Pocket Monster, which has just been on a tear lately. I mean, even since recording this episode, we are nearly approaching now 200,000 subscribers. We're within 800,000. We're within 8,000, excuse me, 200,000, nearly 800,000 from a million. But anyway, a million is something that is on our radar for perhaps by the end of next year as far as a goal. But for right now, we're just having a lot of fun and doing something pretty incredible. And if you go to the YouTube channel, Deep Pocket Monster, do pay attention to the different kinds of videos that we're coming out with. If you wanted to go, in fact, back into our history of very first videos, you'll see we experimented with a few different things, a lot of more historical type of videos. And then we started to find our buckets, find exactly what the audience wants. And now we're at a point where every new video, if it doesn't hit 100,000 views in a week, then it wasn't a good video. It didn't start out that way, that's for sure. And hopefully this episode gave you some insight in terms of our approach for this channel. And we'll see where it goes. I think that there's a ton of upside here. And most importantly, we're always just trying to keep it fun, because if we're having fun, then the audience is having fun and everybody wins. So anyway, I hope you're having fun, and I hope that your ventures are going well too. If you haven't done so already, hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out, because I will be updating you on this channel and some of my other side projects in the future. And we have a lot of great episodes coming your way, so I don't want you to miss out. Hit that subscribe button. And again, thank you so much. And if you have the opportunity, make sure you head on over to SPI Pro. If you go to spipro.com, you'll be able to apply to an amazing community with entrepreneurs just like you, to be able to connect, to mastermind, to get challenged. We recently ran a challenge to purge our email lists, and we kind of did that all together so that we can kind of do it as a group and be there for support. Team SPI was there for support to help people through that process. So that's just an example of the things that go on in there. And I hope you check it out. Again, go to spipro.com and we can make sure it's a great fit for both of us. And I look forward to seeing you in there. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. And I look forward to serving you in the next episode of the Smart Passive Income Podcast. Until then, cheers, peace out. And as always, Team Flynn for the win. Bye. Thanks for listening to the Smart Passive Income Podcast at smartpassiveincome.com. I'm your host, Pat Flynn. Our senior producer is Sarah Jane Hess. Our series producer is David Grabowski. And our executive producer is Matt Gartland. Sound and video editing by Sean West Media. The Smart Passive Income Podcast is a production of SPI Media. We'll catch you in the next session. Starting a business can feel daunting and confusing, but it doesn't have to be. That's why Terry Rice started the Launch Your Business Podcast, another awesome show from the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Each week, Terry shares strategic actions, specific tools, and what he refers to as high-performance mindsets that allow you to thrive under pressure. Recent guests include rapper T.I., Amy Porterfield, and yours truly. And Terry frequently publishes value-packed solo shows too, like this one titled How to Write Proposals That Get Accepted and Don't Take Forever to Write. Great stuff. So make sure you listen in to Launch Your Business right now on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or Stitcher.